Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, I sense an exciting show. I sense that we've got some pep in our step today. Chris Towers is, like, making jokes off the air. He's in a good mood. Scott seems like he's in a good mood. Easter's coming up, which means we get to talk about peeps. The worst food ever, if you could even call them food. Clayton Kershaw is back, and there's plenty to get to from the world of fantasy baseball. Good morning, guys. Happy Tuesday to you. I'm Adam Azer. Hello, Scott White. What's up?
We're really going to do this with peeps again.
We are every year. Every year. Are you still putting them in your tea or whatever you do?
Have you ever done it with coffee?
I don't drink coffee. So no, I've never. And yes, I still do.
Sorry.
I still put it. Did I sound offended when
yes.
I said that?
Yes, very.
Oh, okay.
Hit my head off.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh.
Idiot.
I thought we were in good mood this morning.
Yeah. The show is rude.
I thought we had talked about this before. It makes me realize you don't remember any personal details of mine.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, Adam, you said we were in good mood. Scott's actually in kind of a jerky mood. Between that and the headline that he put for his piece on the struggling stars, he's kind of a grouch.
Well, let's
today.
See. What is it? What's the headline?
Fantasy baseball, : Aaron Nola, Jose Ramirez, and all those other struggling studs will be fine, comma, you impatient ingrates.
Oh my gosh, Scott White! Scott White, what's going on over there? Well, let's start with, alright, Jose Ramirez had a good game, he homered and he stole two bases, so that's nice to see. But let's start with, the struggling pitchers from yesterday, and the four that I have in this section are Noah Syndergaard, Aaron Nola, Yu Darvish, I'm sure we'll have a lot of, there's good and bad with Yu Darvish and Raisel Iglesias. He blew his first save. He's got a 6.75 ERA. But the two guys who squared off yesterday, Mets and Phillies, Noah Syndergaard. I think you look at his game log, it's really not that bad. It's just, 113 whips, great, 29 strikeouts in 24 innings, but a bloated ERA, 5.63. Aaron Nola, though, I mean, the control has been bad. 11 walks, 19 strikeouts and 19 and a third. Gabe Kapler talking about how Nola just doesn't really have his command right now. Do you guys have, well, Scott White, what do you think about those morons out there that have concerns about Noah Syndergaard and Aaron Nola?
I think it doesn't pay to have concerns. Ultimately, you're talking about a 2.5 week stretch of the season that would probably go unnoticed if it happened at a later stretch. And I say that even understanding Nola, I don't think he ever gave up more than 400 runs in a start last year, but that was obviously something so abnormal that you shouldn't have expected it to continue. I think there's not really any concrete concerns for Nola in terms of like a loss of skill. We could quibble about a mile per hour of velocity, maybe, but I don't think that's making all the difference here. I think it's more a matter of, I think he made only three starts this spring. Another case of a guy who maybe didn't pitch enough, and he doesn't have his off-speed arsenal up to mid-season form yet. It's really just the fact that he's not getting as much movement on those pitches as he did before. And that's probably all it is. He's probably going to be fine. You're not going to, if you try trading him now, you're obviously going to get 80 cents on the dollar at most, and you're limiting your team's upside that way when it's probably nothing. There's like a 90% chance it's nothing.
Yeah.
And that's a bad idea.
Yeah, Nola's next start is at Colorado. So if you really want to, if you want to gamble, you really want to buy low, you could try to wait another start. I mean, I think everybody knows it's tough to pitch in Colorado, but the numbers could still look bad if he has a bad start. But I feel like all of us would say buy low on Aaron Nola. Chris, are you seeing anything with either Syndergaard or Nola that concerns you? And I'll just say Syndergaard has a 289 FIP right now, by the way. So I think things look good for him. What about Nola?
No, not really. I mean, even, you know, like his velocity is down, but when you compare it to last March/April, it's really not. It's right around where it was at this point last season. So No, I don't see anything with both of these guys. Like, with Syndergaard, you can look and see, well, he's throwing his slider and curveball a little less hard. Maybe that's making them a little less effective, but he's only given up one home run between the two pitches. I don't think he's given up an extra base hit on the slider yet. So, no, I don't see much that's concerning with either of these two guys. You know, unless there's just something, it's possible there's something we don't know about and that we can't know about right now. But based on the information we have, I see no reason to worry about them.
When you look at Nola Syndergaard, do you maybe reduce your expectations? Do you say, Nola's fine, but he might not be the Cy Young caliber pitcher we thought? Or do you still have those high expectations?
Yeah, I mean, Nola was in a weird spot with the starting pitcher rankings before the season, at least in ADP, because I think it was like sixth off the board. And that's kind of a weird spot because it felt like there was like a clear top tier and then things got a little muddier from like 6 to 11 maybe. So maybe he's more like the 10th best pitcher. I don't see any reason right now to really adjust your expectations for him.
Okay. After Colorado this weekend, he should line up to face Miami and Detroit at home in the two starts after that. That's Aaron Nola. All right, what did we think of Yu Darvish? Because, you know, I had a strange night. I watched this game until, I don't know, about the fifth inning, and then I fell asleep in the 8 o'clock hour, and then I woke up and watched and watched almost all of the Dodgers game from like 10 o'clock to almost 1 a.m. because I wanted to see Kershaw pitch. Darvish, though, like, I just don't know if he's good, but I missed the part where he started saying, screw it, I'm just going to throw as hard as I can. Toward the end of his start, he is throwing 98, 99 miles per hour.
Yeah.
He said he was tired in the first inning because of the Miami heat, and it was freezing in Chicago. They come to Miami, he's exhausted. He just didn't look like that good of a pitcher, but then I missed the highlights, I guess. So I don't know. Scott sent me a trade offer on Yu Darvish, which I don't think I'm going to take, but it was fair. He sent me my Yu Darvish for his Marco Gonzalez. I don't know, guys. Where are we on Darvish? I'm very confused, very confused.
There were two interesting things about this start. There was the one pitch late in the start that he threw like 99 miles an hour that hit Lewis Brinson, bounced off the catcher's glove, appeared to hurt Wilson Contreras a little bit, and hit the umpire, which was kind of incredible. And also, yeah, just that quote after the start, quote, I was trying to throw as hard as I could, not for the strike zone, just as hard as I could. I should do that next time. Seriously, I'm thinking too much for strike. I should do that for next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his 15 maybe walks and 17 and two-thirds really makes me think that Yu Darvish is thinking too much about throwing strikes. His command was terrible last year, and he's walking a lot of guys this year. All right, so I'm sorry. Where are we on Yu Darvish? I'll stop talking. I have a lot to say on Yu Darvish, but I'll let you guys do it.
I mean, thinking too much about throwing strikes and not throwing strikes is something that I've heard happens. Like, it's, you don't want to aim
maybe
with the ball. You want to just use your natural athleticism to throw it straight to the plate. I think that's a thing.
We need a drop.
I mean, we're talking about, I think his peak prior to this start velocity was 95. Miles per hour. So we're talking about an increase of 2 to 3 just in this one start here. And I think it's very encouraging. I think.
Well, but listen, that's with context, Scott, right? Cause like he just reared back and said, screw it, I'm going to throw as hard as I can. That is not a sustainable philosophy. And he didn't do that for a lot of the start. And like you said, Chris, it hit Lewis Brinson. So if he is going to throw 98 miles per hour, he's probably not going to be throwing strikes.
Well, he threw several pitches 98. It wasn't just the one.
He's not throwing strikes at 93, 94 either. So I'd rather him not throw strikes at 98, 99.
He's not going to be throwing 98 miles per hour every pitch. Like, his arm is going to fall off.
Look, this is something that we've seen in Major League Baseball over the last few years, is guys just realizing that since there's no expectation of them going through the order multiple times, and Yu Darvish has only finished 6 innings and 9 of his 12 starts since joining the Cubs anyway, you might as well just be as good as you can for as long as you can. Figure out the rest.
3 of his 12 starts, you mean?
I think 3 of his 12 starts, plus, he has gone 6.
Okay, yeah.
It's not like this is the first time he's thrown 98. I mean, he threw mini 97 miles per
where
hour.
Where are we on Yu Darvish? How much do you trust him? I don't trust Yu Darvish.
Yeah, that's right.
I was starting to get nervous. Even at the start of yesterday's start, I was starting to get nervous. But as you said, I made you a trade offer afterward. I think what this was the most encouraging sign for him yet. I mean, he had 14 swinging strikes in this game.
Marlins.
After, I think, 12 last time.
Marlins.
I still think there's a lot there to work with.
Okay. I do think it's tough to gauge people based on how they do against the Marlins. That is such a bad lineup. I think he's getting better with each start, and his next two starts should be against the Diamondbacks, which is a fairly favorable matchup. All right, who would you rather have, Chris, Marco Gonzalez, or Yu Darvish? I'm gonna reject the trade offer. It was a fair trade offer, Scott. I think you saw my tweets about how I was a little discouraged about Darvish yesterday, and you tried to capitalize. I'm gonna reject it. But
I made offers in several leagues. It wasn't just you. Okay. I wasn't just picking on Adam Azer here.
Okay, well,
that's fine.
Wasn't picking on me. I'd reject it too. All right, so then we'll say Darvish ahead of Marco Gonzalez, but. Is there another pitcher that may have surpassed him that was drafted after Yu Darvish? Like, obviously, Glasnow is in the same range. Glasnow's way ahead of him. How about, like, Colin McHugh or Yu Darvish?
I would take McHugh.
Me too.
Okay. Raisel Iglesias. We have reason to be concerned here, or just a bad start for Iglesias? Bad beginning to the season.
He's essentially made one start, right? Like, 6 2/3 innings. He's given up 4 runs. Is that what the... What it is right now?
Yeah, 2 homers, 5 walks, 8 strikeouts.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think unless there's signs of injury or diminished stuff, I don't think you worry about relievers at this point in the season. Unless they're going to
all the alternatives
and he's not.
And all the alternatives except for I think Amir Garrett's been fine, but everybody else has been lousy. So why they want to be thinking about removing him anyway?
Okay, from some of the struggling pitchers to a season debut, I don't know what the adjective was for it. I'm going to tell you
good.
This. I don't
he
think
pitched,
I
he pitched well.
I don't think I'm going to start him this weekend at Milwaukee. I don't. This is Clayton Kershaw we're talking about. Maybe that's controversial. I don't think he's earned it. There was good, but there. I mean, he is not throwing hard at all, and. You know, I read that like an ESPN article, a scout said that his slider did not have enough depth to distinguish it from like a cutter. And that's important because it really did look like he was throwing a cutter. I know he doesn't throw a cutter, Clayton Kershaw, who threw 7 innings, gave up 2 runs in the first and then 6 scoreless after that. He struck out 6. He got a ton of ground balls, 10 ground balls, 3 fly balls and 14 swinging strikes. Really good rate on 84 pitches, but very, very reliant on his curveball. Just doesn't really have his fastball now. I feel like my personal opinion, I think he's going to have to pick up some velocity if he's going to be great. He could maybe can still be very good, but what do you guys think about Clayton Kershaw?
I feel like that's last year's battle you're fighting, right? I mean, it was down a little from last year, but the big drop happened last year. And that cutter, slider, whatever we're going to call it, it had, he got 7 swinging strikes with it. He got half of his swinging strikes on it. I was encouraged. I mean, just the fact that he went, I think he went 7 innings.
7, yep.
I mean, that's fresh off the DL.
84 pitches. He was very efficient.
Yeah. I mean, that they let him go 7. And, you know, just that still makes him a standout at starting pitcher, even if he's not going to be a strikeout per inning guy, which he wasn't last year either.
I will say this, Adam. Mm-hmm. If I had told you before the season that Clayton Kershaw was going to be throwing as hard as Chris Sale, I feel like you would have been ecstatic. So, got to think about it that way. Context matters.
Yeah. Did you guys watch the start?
I watched a little bit of it. Yeah.
Right.
I didn't.
It's not the same. Look, it's not the same Kershaw. That's just
right. And that's the
we
thing,
know this.
It's not that he can't be good. It's that his margin for error is a lot slimmer when he's averaging 90 and peaking at 91 than when he was averaging 93, 94 and peaking in the high 90s. But that doesn't mean he can't be good. This is still one of the best command and control pitchers in baseball. We still saw him finish 4th in the National League in ERA last season. Still nearly a strikeout per inning, not quite. You worry about him staying healthy, but his price was discounted enough once we were drafting that I think you can just look at Clayton Kershaw, someone who's going to help you when he's there. He's not going to be the ace of your staff and carry you, but I definitely think he's not going to hurt you. Maybe you do sit him against a Milwaukee, but
yeah, maybe
that says as much about, like, how many pitchers wouldn't you sit against Milwaukee? And is that in Miller Park?
Yeah, it's in Miller Park. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how many pitchers wouldn't you sit at Milwaukee?
Well, I guess that's 12, my question. Is 15? I guess he's not. Maybe he's in that group. I'm going to be maybe a little nervous about it, but, Kershaw's behind Syndergaard and Nola for you. Now that he's healthy, he's still behind them, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. Who else? Erman Marquez or Clayton Kershaw?
Kershaw.
I think I have Marquez. Marquez. Yeah. I'll say Marquez.
Okay. All right. So overall, you know what? Good start. Very good start. And not only did they let him pitch the seventh, they actually let him hit in the sixth to come out in the seventh. When we thought maybe he might be done, because it was a 2-1 or 2-2 game or something like that. They let him hit, and they wanted him to pitch seven innings, and he did. He did not get the win, although the Dodgers did win on a walk-off home run from Jock Peterson. And if you've got Jock Peterson and he's got righties, like I think nothing but righties this week too, maybe one lefty, you start him because he is hitting. And you should go to sportsline.com. We got some fantasy content on there. You got an injury analysis, hitter matchups, things like that. But also, it's a gambling site. It's a great gambling site, and you will make your money back quickly with the advice on Sportsline, and especially the first month. The first month is only $1 if you sign up on sportsline.com with our promo code Vegas. Promo code is Vegas. $1 for your first month, then $9.99 after that. We only had 10 games yesterday, but we have a lot of news. Cody Bellinger left after being hit by a pitch on the leg. X-rays were negative. He's not expected to miss an extended amount of time. Whew. He's still the number one hitter in fantasy, still ahead of Christian Yelich. Jeremy Jeffress will be activated today. Yesterday, Josh Hader pitched one inning. He gave up a run. He gave up a home run. He came in a 10-6 game in the ninth inning. So not a save situation, but let's call it a closer-like situation. We'll see what happens. Jeffress should be back today. Mike Trout DH'd. David Robertson is on the IL with elbow soreness. Okay, who do you want in the Phillies bullpen right now, guys?
Like, it was a mess even before this. So I mean, Dominguez is probably the best pitcher still, off to a slow start, but you know, he doesn't have a save yet. The only two who do have saves are Neris and Neshek, and there's a lefty whose name I don't even know. He got a save in a 14 inning game, and that's it. So I guess Dominguez, but like you shouldn't count on anybody for saves right now.
Okay, I have Hector Neris. Dominguez wasn't available in the league I have, but I think any of them could get a save, and Neris, I've said this before when I picked him up, you know, he's a good pitcher. He got off to a really bad start last year. He came back. They sent him down. He came back, and he was amazing.
He was stupid good.
Yeah.
At the end of last year.
Yeah. So I'm
35 strikeouts in his final 17 and two thirds innings in the second half of the season.
Oh man, Tyler Skaggs, why you got to be on the IL already? At least it's not an arm injury, and he had a tough matchup this week anyway. But Tyler Skaggs has an ankle injury. He expects to miss just the minimum. And I got a request to play something. So here we go.
I'm going to Tyler Skaggs.
No, you're not. Not
well,
for 10
days. That's the thing,
days.
Adam. No, he did Tyler Skaggs.
Yes. He did Tyler Skaggs. He's on the IL. Ken Giles was sick yesterday. Joe Biagini filled in and got the save for Toronto. Harrison Bader has a hamstring injury. And Tyler O'Neill left with arm soreness. So you should take a look and see if Jose Martinez is available. I have a little stash section, and he is in that section. Jose Martinez is 46% owned. Maybe he gets some playing time here. Jose Ramirez, like I said, he homered and he stole two bases. And how about this? Paul Goldschmidt, guys, he has hit five of his seven home runs in Miller Park. He's batting .226 with seven home runs. He has a career-high K rate so far. Pretty high walk rate, too, but 21 strikeouts in 16 games. Just a .182 BABIP. But at home, Paul Goldschmidt's batting .115. On the road, he's batting .306 with five home runs. They've all come at Miller Park. Do you think that's fantasy relevant at all for Paul Goldschmidt?
No, not at all.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm not trying to be dismissive, but like, his strikeout rate was higher last year. It was really, really high at the beginning of the season. And then he turned back into Paul Goldschmidt. It's not like he's even been disappointing so far this season. So, no, I think Paul Goldschmidt's Paul Goldschmidt.
No, I guess I was saying, like, do you think there's a chance that he's going to be disappointing because he's going to be hurt by his home ballpark? And right now his numbers are inflated by 5 home runs at Miller Park.
I don't think he's playing in a worse park than he did last year.
Yeah, okay.
And
Humidor.
And, yeah, I mean, they happen to have played 2 series at Miller Park. One of those games, at least one, was against Corbin Burnes, who's given up home runs to everybody. So I would agree. It's just too little. It's too small of a sample to really make anything of it, you know?
Well, we do have to talk about Christian Yelich and some 2018 trends that are continuing. Yelich is a power hitter. Freddie Freeman as not so much of a power hitter. We'll come back and talk about those 2018 trends that are continuing into 2019 right after this quick break.
Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting. Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with 2 of their most powerful trucks ever. The new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Christian Yelich had a 35% home run to fly ball rate last year. Unsustainable, they said. Well, now it's 38.2% after his 3 homer day, and he's actually hitting fly balls this year, including some pop-ups, infield fly balls.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not going to have a 38% home run to fly ball rate this season. Not going to have a 35% home run to fly ball rate. If he did, he would probably hit 60 home runs. because he is hitting the ball in the air more often. His ground ball rate is down to 43.6%, which is by far the lowest rate of his career. He has, I think, 31 batted balls in the air compared to 24 on the ground so far. If Christian Yelich is a legitimate fly ball hitter now, then everything both Heath and I said about him not hitting for as much power this year is probably going to look really stupid. And that's what we have to remember with all of these things. And we talked about it a little bit with Madison Bumgarner earlier in the season where, you know, when we say a guy can't do X, it's also assuming that he continues to do Y from the previous season. But if Christian Yelich really has continued to tweak his swing to get the ball in the air more, then all bets are off. He might end up being, you know, a 35 homer guy every single season.
I think Yelich, Scott, when would you draft Yelich now? Because, yeah, I was a little nervous about drafting him like 8th or 9th overall. I just didn't think he would hit 30 home runs. He already has 8. He's obviously great. Maybe it's too early to just dismiss all doubts, but I mean, I think he's probably a top 5 pick at this point.
Yeah, well, I was setting the over under for home runs at 29.5, which is higher than I think Chris and Heath had him, but it was still also expecting a pretty big step back in that category. And I had him as like a late first rounder. Like, I mean, he's probably closer to JD Martinez now, which is the middle of the first round. Between the two, I think I'd still take Martinez, but it's more of a toss up.
How about Jose Ramirez or Christian Yelich?
Ramirez for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really worried about Ramirez, so I guess I'd have to say him. I mean, as awful as he's been, he's up to 5 steals now on the season, so he's been contributing something. Okay. And there's not looking at what he's doing in terms of making contact and the way the ball's coming off the bat. There's not really much to be worried about for Ramirez. So I would still take Ramirez.
All right. Well, that was a 2018 trend continuing, Christian Yelich's power. How about Chris Bryant is not a power hitter? That trend is continuing so far. He's batting just 236 with 1 home run and 5 doubles in 14 games, and he is actually hitting a lot of ground balls, a 50% ground ball rate for Chris Bryant. He's been okay against righties. That was a problem for him last year. But, you know, since the shoulder injury, like the first 38 games of the season last year, and this is something that people might forget about Chris Bryant, he actually had a 1022 OPS. He had 8 home runs in 38 games. Last 64 games, he had a 717 OPS. He hit 5 home runs in 64 games. So, look, it's a slow start for Chris Bryant. Is that all it is, or are we concerned, Chris?
I mean, it's one of those things where it hasn't been, like, bad luck. When you look at the batted ball data, he actually has pretty much hit the ball about as poorly as his results would suggest. He has a 312 WOBA and a 310 expected WOBA. So you can't just say, well, his luck will come through. But I do think he's better than this. He has hit the ball harder this season. The ground ball rate's a little concerning, but it's so early, and he's been such a consistent fly ball hitter that I mean, you're a little bit worried, I guess, but that concern was priced into his draft price. So I haven't changed my opinion on Chris Bryant that much so far.
All right, so do you think he's a good buy low, or do you kind of feel a little nervous?
It depends how low.
Eugenio Suarez or Chris Bryant?
I would take Chris Bryant, yeah.
Scott?
Mm-hmm.
Bryant?
Yeah, I agree. I'd be reluctant to do anything with Bryant just because of the investment I have in him. Fortunately, I'm not invested in him personally because I was concerned about really the 2-year trend of not hitting for much home run power when that's the main thing he brings to the table. So this is, you know, this continues a longer term trend. And that's when I think you have to be worried about maybe early season numbers or when there's a clear loss of skill. So I'm a little concerned. Yeah. But at the same time, it still could turn around pretty quickly. It's still a small sample. It's still hard to know what to make of it. It's just a little more concerning because of the recent history.
All right, next trend that has continued. That's Chris Bryant we were talking about. Next trend that has continued, Freddie Freeman is not a power hitter. And I don't think you can really complain. He's having a great start to the season, batting .345 with 14 walks to 8 strikeouts and 5 doubles, but only 1 home run. And it looks, you know, it looks kind of a lot like last year, just a ton of line drives. And Freddie Freeman only hit 23 home runs last year. He still was a top 2 second baseman, number 12 hitter in points, number 17 in Roto. I picked him.
First baseman.
Also a top 2 first baseman.
Yeah. I picked Freddie Freeman to, win the MVP, I think, because I kind of felt like as he got further removed from the wrist injury, maybe the power would come back and he would just be like an absolutely amazing hitter. I'm content with him just like this, but I just want to point it out. Freddie Freeman is not a power hitter. And, you know, do you think he'll hit even 25 home runs this year?
I would take the over. He's still hitting the ball really, really hard. He's still, you know, his launch angle is actually up a little bit. I don't see much reason to be concerned that he's not going to be a source of power. There was that year and like a quarter where he looked like he might be a legitimate 35 to 40 homer guy before the wrist injury. That's, I think we are past that enough to say that that's probably not going to happen, but he's so good at everything else when it comes to hitting that. No, I have zero concerns about Freddie Freeman.
Next trend. Rafael Devers still can't hit lefties, Scott. He is 3-for-20 with 1 double. He hasn't hit righties all that well. He's hit them a .308 batting average, but only a .359 slugging. And this is someone that people are concerned about, and I don't blame them. Rafael Devers still struggling against lefties. And he's also committed 5 errors, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're really thinking about limiting his playing time because of that. The encouraging thing he's done is he's greatly improved both his walk and strikeout rates from last year. Now he's not really elevating the ball at all. It's almost like he's having to address all these different issues one at a time and very slowly. And there's probably still a great hitter at the end of it. We got to remember this guy is only 22 years old. He got called up so young, and there just seems to be a lot of on-the-job learning because of that. But I do still think the upside is very high. I don't think in like a head-to-head context with those smaller roster spots, he's necessarily must own. But if you do have the ability to stash upside, he's somebody that you still want to have stashed away.
Okay, that's Rafael Devers for you. My starting third baseman in the podcast points league, and I am thinking about trying to acquire a third baseman. Joey Gallo is still a batting average liability, Chris Towers. He is batting 217 right now after a good day. His batting average going up and down a lot, obviously, early in the season. But, you know, we were hoping that he might be able to hit like in the 240s. So far, not so good in that regard for Joey Gallo.
Yeah, the thing that's tough with him is he's always going to underperform your expectations when it comes to comparing his batted ball profile to other players, because he is so shiftable and teams. I believe the shift rate is up to 96.1% of his plate appearances he has been shifted on, according to StatCast. So they're basically, every team is basically just saying we're going to do this until you beat us. The one thing I will point out though is, in 2017, he had a 222 expected batting average. In 2018, he had a 232. And he underperformed both of those, and I think you would expect him to. This year, he has a 291 expected batting average so far. It's early, only 23 batted balls, but there are signs that he has made some changes that could lead to better results. I still think 240 is closer to the ceiling, but it's still realistic to me. And I think he was hitting like 180 before yesterday's game or something like that.
Yeah. He's also leading baseball in hard contact rate, Joey Gallo. And this one, I'm going to skip it because we're getting a little long here. David Peralta hits the ball hard. This is continuing from last year. Last year, he had a 48.6% hard contact rate. This year, 48.2% for David Peralta. So far he's the number 16 outfielder in points, number 17 in Roto, and that's basically where he was last year. And he finally walked. David Peralta drew two walks, I think, over the weekend, batting .373 and has 9 doubles. It is Team Name Tuesday. I've got a few of them. EGLY, you ain't got no alibi. You're Fegley. Yeah, you're Fegley. Okay. This one, I don't know why. Pat in Ohio, our man, sent it in for Team Name Tuesday for baseball. Golden Tate Warriors. All right, I'll just bring it up.
Yeah.
Warriors blew a 31-point lead last night. Pretty amazing. Here's a Yasmani.
Don't forget about the time they blew a 3-1 series lead in the NBA Finals.
I won't.
When they had the unanimous MVP.
Who was playing with a bad ankle is the only reason why they lost that series. I think it was an ankle. Delusions of
Let's get these jokes off.
Delusions of Grandal.
Sure, yeah.
Grandolph the Gray.
Yep.
Seashells by the Seashore.
That's excellent.
Forgot About Trey.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. Forgot About Trey.
Yeah,
it's good.
Mancini or Turner?
Turner.
Okay.
Either way.
Yeah.
I'd prefer Mancini.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yep, that's very good.
I want my Vogelbach. That's good.
Yeah.
And Dogs Don't Know It's Not Bregman. Is that like bacon? Dogs Don't Know It's Not Bacon?
Yeah. I think it's the Beggin' Strips.
Right. It's Bregman! Okay. All right. We got some of your emails when we come back, plus stash candidates, a segment called Never Gonna Give You Up, and injuries, news, and notes, and what else? Marcelo Zuna and Wilson Contreras have been great. Deep league targets and much more. We'll be right back on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
All right, quick round of emails here at fantasybaseball@CBSI.com, CBSI.com. Hoppy Easter week, says Brett G. from Wisconsin. Dear Peter, Roger, and Bugs.
They have nothing in common.
There's a rabbit. What is your stance?
two of them are rabbits. One's a bunny.
Right. What is your stance on if peeps are and should be considered a candy? Do we even like peeps? I hope you're all watching the video today. We have a peeps gross or not gross graphics here. Are they yes, they're candy. I mean, what else would they be? They're candy.
Well, so when you go to the supermarket, you don't find peeps in the candy aisle. You find them in the garbage aisle. Where all the garbage is.
They're just like terrible.
I still never heard this peeps are bad take until the arrival of social media. I feel like it's one of those instances.
You live in your cloistered little bubble, and social media has just brought you more worldviews. Okay,
yeah, I guess
you know it's, you got to get out of your bubble and talk to real Americans.
It's a sugar covered marshmallow. Like, if you don't like marshmallows or you don't like sugar, fine, peeps are gross. But if you're somebody who genuinely likes generally likes candy, I don't see why you would be repulsed by it. But I don't think it's the best candy ever.
It's the worst type of marshmallow ever. It's like,
wait,
it's somehow like grainy.
Can I ask Scott a question here?
Yeah, because of the sugar on it.
No, it's the marshmallow itself.
Scott, do you like peanut butter?
Sure.
Do you like chocolate?
Yeah.
We can all agree peanut butter and chocolate is one of the greatest combos. It is so hard to screw that up. Yet Butterfinger somehow manages to screw up peanut butter and chocolate by being
Butterfinger's delicious.
Butterfingers are great.
Get out of here.
You're wrong.
Both of you?
Listen, get out of here.
Guys,
go away.
It's one of the best.
They made a new Butterfinger. They came out with a new Butterfinger. If a candy was so
great.
Good, they would never have made a new one. Like, they needed to make a new one because it was terrible.
This is a ridiculous argument on its face because there are like 11 billion different kinds of Reese's Cup,
which variations.
Is the candy that's impossible to screw up.
No,
the big cups. There's the big cups with Reese's pieces inside.
That's different.
Of them.
No, that's different. That's just variations.
It's the same exact.
No, it's
the
not.
Same
this is,
exact
this
thing.
Is like a new candy. This is like a do-over. This is like, forget about the old Butterfinger.
No,
we've
they
got
still
a new
have
one.
The old one. No. Now they just have a creamy one, and it's great.
It's terrible. Okay.
The best part about Butterfinger is the texture, the way it's like crumbles in your mouth.
The best
There's
part
be a class action lawsuit for all the fillings that people have lost eating Butterfinger.
The best part about Butterfingers is how it gets stuck in your teeth forever and you have an uncomfortable feeling in your mouth. I love that about a candy. Robert from Lodi, California says, Gene Segura just stole his first base of the season. Should we be worried he's not going to run? And can we drop Nate Eovaldi?
Do you not like steak because it gets stuck in your teeth and you have to floss afterward? I mean, feel like that's worse.
No, it's not worse. It's not that it gets stuck in your teeth. It's that it coats your teeth. It becomes your teeth, a Butterfinger.
But you have saliva in your mouth. It dissolves it away quickly enough.
Not quickly enough. Do you think Gene Segura is going to run this year? And can we drop Nate Eovaldi?
I like a Heath bar.
Well, you like a Creath bar.
He'll run. He's not going to steal 30
bases. Yeah, He may not as much, which is, you know, he was a 22 steal guy last year. Is that right? Something like that.
Sounds right.
I'd be a little concerned he's between 15 and 20 as opposed to over 20, but, you know, I'm not sure that makes a huge difference in terms of how often you play him. I think Eovaldi is droppable. Yeah. You may be picking him up again at some point, but the upside isn't so high that you have to stick with him and keep a roster spot invested in him if there are other interesting things emerging off waivers.
Where do you guys think Gene Segura ranks among shortstops so far?
9.
I would guess lower because of some weirdos like Swanson, and I'll say 17th.
11th in points, 14th in roto for Segura. Okay. Next question is from Luke in Canton. Dear Creath and Scam, can we talk about Hunter Dozier? I know he had some past prospect hype and is hitting the ball hard. Does Hunter Dozier have post-hype sleeper appeal? Dozier is a Royals first base and third base eligible infielder. He is batting 300 with four home runs. He is better than Brian Dozier. Hunter Dozier has five straight multi-hit games. Does he have some sleeper appeal?
Maybe.
Both of you talk at the same time. Go.
I'd pretty much written him off, but he's making a lot of contact, and he's has a fly ball rate over 40. So that would suggest that he could potentially hit a good number of home runs. It's too early for me to completely be back on board, but I'm at least keeping an eye on him.
Okay, Hunter Dozier, 16% owned. Might take a chance there. Would you drop Christian Walker for Hunter Dozier?
No.
Sure.
No and a yes. Okay, very helpful. From Kurt, what in the world do you do with Travis Shaw right now? Move on, ride it out, or get what you can get on the trade market?
I don't think you're going to get much. He's a guy who's probably always been a little undervalued by the community as a whole, so I think you just got to hope he turns it around.
And he probably will.
He sat against a lefty over the weekend. Do want to point that out. They have some options there, but yeah, he'll probably turn it around. Bad start for Travis Shaw. From Christian, dear Donald, Aaron, Pretzels, and Max. What? Donald, Aaron, Pretzels, and Max? I need to know what this is. Rest of the way
bunnies.
In a roto league, Rafael Devers or Jeff McNeil?
I think I'd probably go with Devers just because of the playing time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jeff McNeil's lack of playing time, his consistency he sat against lefties, has been one of the more disappointing developments of the season so far. And he could still just keep hitting so well that it changes, but they have a lot of alternatives there, the Mets.
You guys said Devers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was looking up Donald, Aaron, Pretzels, and Max. I do not have the answers. Time to talk about some stash candidates here. Tell me if you think these guys are worth stashing. People are stashing Williams Astudillo, who started at third base yesterday after sitting two straight games. But Marwin Gonzalez has been pretty bad, but Miguel Sano is coming back. And Jimmy Nelson is also owned in a lot of leagues. Astudillo and Nelson are about 75% owned. And then a little bit lower, you got Jose Martinez, Alex Verdugo maybe. Scott Kingery, I put him on here because Cesar Hernandez, although Cesar Hernandez is heating up a little bit, but he has been bad. And Kingery has been good, 8 for 17 so far. And Eric Thames, if Jesus Aguilar just gets benched, which has been the case a little bit recently. So again, my name's on this list, and I want to know if you think they're stash candidates. Williams Astudillo, Jimmy Nelson, Jose Martinez, Alex Verdugo, Scott Kingery, and Eric Thames.
Yeah, I mean, my favorites would be Astudillo, who's obviously well-owned already, and Verdugo and Jose Martinez. I think those are the ones who, if they play, I feel confident are going to be productive in fantasy. Kingery and Thames, not so much. So those would be my preferred options. I feel like it would have to be, you know, maybe not Astudillo, because most anyone, if you're looking to the waiver wire for catching help, then most anyone you put there is not going to be providing much of anything anyway. So maybe you can just get away with starting a guy who plays maybe 50% of the time at most elsewhere. But the others, Jose Martinez, Alex Verdugo, I think you're talking about like a roto lineup context where the roster sizes are bigger. That's really the main place you're going to be able to stash players like them.
I would love to see Kingery get an opportunity to play, because there is still a lot of potential. Let's not forget how excited we were about him last year, but he's not someone that I think you have to stash right now because he doesn't have that path to playing time. If someone gets hurt and it opens up either Segura or Cesar Hernandez, then yeah, I would be really interested in adding him because there's a power speed threat there. But right now, no, you don't need to be stashing him. I will say, Scott, he wasn't on the graphics, so I don't know if you forgot, but Jimmy Nelson, I definitely want to stash him where he's available. Mm-hmm. We can't forget, yep. He was kind of the Ramon Marquez of 2017, the way he finished that season before the shoulder injury. We don't know if the velocity jump that he had that year is going to be there. but he was pitching like a legitimate borderline ace that year. So and if he's back, I want him.
And he's easy to stash everywhere because of the IL spot and because he's a pitcher, frankly. I mean, the shallower leagues, I think you're more likely to have a pitcher on your bench than a hardly playing, position player.
Did you guys see Tyler O'Neill's throw last night? I am just seeing it now. Just do a news search for Tyler O'Neill. Cause I wanted to, cause Jose Martinez, like, forget about stash. Like, Tyler O'Neill left with an injury and Harrison Bader's banged up right now. I mean, he might just straight up play and he's 46% owned, but Tyler O'Neill made a throw last night. Oh my goodness. That is what, where was he throwing that? That was awesome.
That looks like a throw I would have made playing intramural softball. They stuck me in the outfield. That was always a bad idea, sticking me in the outfield. I was useless out there.
You guys may not believe me. I was a great kickball center fielder. Just terrific. Okay, next section is called... Got to cue it up. Here we go. It is... Never Gonna Give You Up. Brandon Nimmo, Jesse
That's
Winker...
All we're getting? Never gonna let you down. Never gonna run
desert you. Okay, that's all we're getting. Brandon Nimmo, Jesse Winker, Framil Reyes. I hope you didn't give them up because they're coming around. Brandon Nimmo in his last eight games is 11 for 28 with three home runs. Briefly, he was put in the eighth spot in the order, but now he's back to lead off. Jesse Winker. All right. He sat yesterday against Clayton Kershaw against a lefty, but he's 7 for 18 with four homers in his last six games. And Framil Reyes is the most available. Winker and Nimmo are 71% owned. Reyes 53% owned and not starting every game. He has started five straight though. That's great. And he now has four home runs in his last eight games and he's hitting, I think, over 300 in that stretch. Scott, I know you talked about Nimmo and Winker yesterday. I'm going to let Chris talk about these guys. Nimmo, Winker, Reyes. Are they must-owns, or do you think the ownership levels are appropriate?
I think Winker's probably must-own. He got off to a bad start this season, but the batted ball data has mostly suggested that he's still hitting the ball well. I guess the walk rate's not where you hope it would be, but it's not bad. So I see very little reason to think he can't live up to the expectations we had for him before the season. I'm a little less optimistic about Nimmo, but he should probably be owned more than 71%. And the thing with Reyes that is really interesting is it does seem like now that he's gotten hot, I think he started seven of the last nine games overall as well. Now that he's hitting, they want to keep him in the lineup. And I think that's a great sign because that might not necessarily be the case for other guys in the mix for them. And I think their ideal outcome does have Framil Reyes in the lineup a lot more often than it doesn't.
He had a 933 OPS in his last 49 games of 2018. He has good plate discipline. Mm-hmm. Scott really liked Framil Reyes. And, I think he should be more than 53% owned. I'm going to look for him in all of my leagues. Winker's the one who sat against the lefty. That's the only concern I have about him meeting the potential. Cause this is the first lefty starting pitcher they faced all year.
Yeah, it's both of those picks were dependent on them both playing so well that they forced their way into everyday at bats. Because I feel like particularly in a points league, three outfielder league, it's hard to stash more than maybe one guy, one hitter who to have one on your, like one guy who you're not able to start because of playing time concerns and you just have on your bench hoping he finds his way into more. So that's really the problem with both of them. But I would absolutely love to have both of them. I think it's easier to own Winker at this point in that format. And Reyes, of course, you can own in the other.
Okay, quick news items here. Jorge Alfaro could be back today for the Marlins. Jason Kipnis is off the IL. He's not good. Billy Hamilton returned to the lineup. Danny Duffy making progress. Anybody want Danny Duffy? Any interest?
No, unless they make him the closer, which was something that he talked about maybe going to the bullpen. Other than that, no.
Carlos Martinez threw a bullpen session. We continue to track him. Lewis Brinson left after being hit by a pitch by a madman on the mound who was just going to throw it as hard as he could, no matter where it ended up. Mitch Garver led off for the Twins yesterday with Max Kepler taking a breather, sitting yesterday. Garver...
starting to play a little more, I think. And then Eric Swanson is going to start for the Mariners on Wednesday. I don't know who he is. Do we care about Eric Swanson?
He's kind of interesting.
Yeah, he was part of the James Paxton.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah. And he's had some interesting numbers in the minors. But it's one of those guys who the production's been better than the scouting reports. And sometimes that works out great, but you know, there's often a reason for it too. So I'm kind of taking a step back and waiting and seeing how this goes.
He looks way too happy in this picture that showed up on Google. Like he does not have a game face.
Just happy to be there.
Yeah, he just doesn't have a game face. I need a game face. I don't see it.
Yeah. Like the 98 Falcons, just happy to be there.
Can't believe he missed that kick, Scott. Oh, wait, was that the... Oh, no, that was the Vikings yeah. missed the kick. It was Gary yeah, Anderson the missed the kick, missed right? The
right.
Yeah, Gary
Perfect
Anderson.
Season, mm-hmm. kicking field goals, except when it mattered most.
But Morton Anderson was on the Falcons. Right, okay.
Yes, he was. Ian, S. Ian.
Okay, so some more from Monday's games. Two up. Marcell Ozuna and Wilson Contreras. Marcell Ozuna having a bounce back season. Well, they're both having bounce back seasons. Ozuna is the number 15 outfielder in points leagues. He has just two walks to 15 strikeouts. Number 9 outfielder in roto leagues. Contreras is the number 1 catcher in points, number 2 in roto behind Grandal. They're both having great starts. They both have 6 home runs. And Contreras has 3 in his last 2 games. So, look, Contreras is a must-start guy. I guess I'll ask, where is he in your catcher rankings? Is he 2? Is he 3?
He is 4.
Behind Grandal?
Because there's Real Muto and Sanchez. I don't think there's any reason to... You might flip the order of those two, but I don't think there's a good reason to move them out of the top 2. I mean, with Sanchez being hurt, he's probably 2. And then there's Grandal, who's been, I think, the highest scoring catcher. Maybe Contreras passed him last night.
He did, yeah.
Grandal's doing everything I hoped he'd do. And then there's Contreras. So, good for him. But there are I think those others have done well enough, or in Real Muto's case, had such a head start that there's no reason to move them behind Contreras.
Do you guys see any reason not to buy the starts for Marcell Ozuna or Wilson Contreras?
Marcell Ozuna's good.
Yeah, it's certainly looking outfielder. That way.
But how good? I mean, is he as good as he was? I get the years mixed up. 2017?
It was 17 was the big breakout. I don't think he's quite that good, but I think he, when you look at his career, 2017 looks like this major outlier, and more often than not, he looks like a high 700s OPS bat. But if you looked at the batted ball data last year, it mostly supported him being somewhere between his career and the 2017 breakout, and that was while he was playing with that shoulder issue. He got that fixed this offseason. He's come out hitting the ball hard, looks like himself. I think he's going to be a mid to high 800s OPS bat.
Okay, and let's go to the rotation from yesterday. 5 pitchers on the bump to talk about. They're all owned in 90% or more of leagues, except one, Freddy Peralta, 86% owned. And why don't we just talk, like, Freddy Peralta, like, goodbye. Off my roster, goodbye, Freddy Peralta.
How have people not moved on from him yet? This was...
2 starts, I bet.
Three out of 4 starts with less than 4 innings. Yeah. Like it was 2 out of 3 before. I don't know.
But that
definitely
one.
You got to move on.
But
now.
That one start.
Yeah, that one was really good.
Yeah, he had 8 scoreless.
We're gonna chase
him.
We're going to chase those moments for a long time. But yeah, he doesn't have the consistency yet.
You say Kikuchi does not know how to throw in the first or second inning. He has a 7.20 ERA in the first inning and a 9 ERA in the second inning. And he's made 5 starts. He has 3 quality starts. His strikeout rate is pretty low, but he has faced mostly low strikeout teams. Yesterday, 5 strikeouts in 6 innings against Cleveland. What do you think about Kikuchi? Is he a... He's must-own. You got to think he's must-own. Is he must-start?
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't done anything wrong enough to be dropped. So from that perspective, he's must-own. But I've been pretty underwhelmed by him. I think this is 2 of the... How many? 5 starts, right?
Yeah.
And 2 of them, he's had double-digit swinging strikes, which is, you know, even then barely breaking double digits. So he does not look like much of a bat misser. And And I think he's had a couple where the walks have been kind of high. It's just not, there's not a lot to get excited about, really.
All right, so let's rank the pitchers in this group here. And Castillo is going to be number one. It's Kikuchi, Luis Castillo, Joey Lucchesi, Freddy Peralta, and Matt Shoemaker. If we make Castillo number one, and we'll put Peralta number five, how would you rank Kikuchi, Lucchesi, and Shoemaker?
I would go, I think it's close. I would go, I feel like upside wise, it's Lucchesi, Shoemaker, Kikuchi right now. But in terms of how safe they are, Kikuchi might be number one. So it's very bunchy.
I'd go Lucchesi, Kikuchi, Shoemaker. It's too bad we couldn't keep that trend going. Do we have another she we could throw on at the end?
Not that I know of. Fringy starting pitchers, only two I have from yesterday are both named Trevor. Trevor Cahill and Trevor Richards. I picked up Cahill for a two-star week. I actually sat him, though, because I just didn't think he was going to do well at Texas and home against Seattle. I don't trust Cahill in a tough matchup. He's 50% owned. And then Trevor Richards has had some control issues. 14 walks and 22 and two-thirds. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it was close to 4/9 last year, which is something I didn't really notice, to be honest. I was more looking at what he did well than what he did poorly. But yeah, the control issues might be something that comes up from time to time. You're still talking about three of his first four starts were quality starts with a good strikeout rate. I'm not dropping him after this, but it's disappointing that the time where he was probably activated the most because, you know, good three starts and two-star week, and then he delivers this stinker. It's disappointing.
Yeah, and his next matchup is at Philadelphia this weekend. We'll see if Richards can bounce back. I would say, to me, Trevor Richards is the pitcher who has the most difference in value, the biggest change in value in a quality starts league versus a wins league. Any disagreement there?
He's certainly in the discussion, yeah.
I mean, a good pitcher on a bad team is basically all you have to be in that discussion. In the bullpen, Kenley Jansen, he got the win, but he gave up a run in an inning. We were a little concerned about Kenley Jansen's swinging strikes. It's been pretty good in three straight appearances, four or five swinging strikes, which is good for a guy who's throwing like, you know, 20-ish pitches. So at least those are coming back. I don't know if the velocity is coming back, but that's my thought on
Kenley Jansen. I'm not too worried about Kenley Jansen anymore. I think later this week I'm going to write a column about things I feel like I'm already wrong about, because mostly
peeps,
my opinions haven't changed
on
anybody.
Do it before Easter so you can include peeps in there.
I'm fine with peeps. The whole world's gone mad.
Yeah. Okay, and then in the deep leagues, we have, tell me if you're interested in any of these guys, Dwight Smith, Orioles outfielder, has three home runs. And they've all come in his, yeah, might have four. No, I think he has three. They've all come in his last five games.
Three.
Listen. Yep.
Two steals.
I say this as a Yankees fan, and I do think Yankee Stadium is a dumb stadium. It is basically a little league park. But the pesky pole, now that the hill in Houston has been eliminated a few years ago, the pesky pole is the dumbest thing in baseball.
Stop.
Dwight Smith hit a home run right next to the pesky pole. It's basically a single. I could hit that.
That's fine. But it's great. It's great that it exists. We should be happy that baseball has these idiosyncrasies.
Idiotsyncrasy. That's
bring
what the
back Towsill, hill, by the way. No. Bring it back.
The Towsill was ridiculous.
Let's bring back the polo grounds, baby. It had a statue in the field.
Monument Park used to be on the field, if I recall, at Yankee Stadium.
Let's do it.
If I don't recall. That was before my time. Dwight Smith, Martin Perez, Brian Goodwin, and Antonio Senzatella.
So I have a soft spot for Dwight Smith because he is the first and to this point only major leaguer to come from my high school. So
hey,
that is a fun note about Dwight Smith. He hasn't struck out much, and you could make the case he's actually had some bad BABIP. Look, there's speed there. I'm not sure how much power is there, but he's going to get a lot of playing time. He's played, other than Mancini, maybe VR, he's been an everyday player for the Orioles, and that doesn't look like it's going to change. So in like five outfielder leagues, I could see him having some value. But it's limited upside.
Okay. Dwight Smith. And on Team Name Tuesday, Antonio Sans Nutella. Sans, like, you know, no Nutella. Hold the Nutella.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like Nutella.
I'm not sure that's original.
The Nutella craze has kind of died down.
I'm not sure that's
a little bit.
Ooh. Yeah, you know, we go to
millennials are turning on Nutella.
No, it just, there was a period like 4 or 5 years ago when every single, like, cooking video that came up on Facebook was like Nutella pizza and Nutella, I don't know, I can't think of anything weird. Nutella lasagna.
And then they realized it was candy, and candy is evil.
Yeah, it's just,
especially
it's pretty good
in marshmallow form.
My wife gets Nutella ice cream. My wife likes to get Nutella ice cream. It's usually one of her
Nutella with ice cream.
Well, she gets the flavor. You know, one of the two scoops she gets is typically Nutella. I'm not quite sure I'll be there.
All right, so you take a graham cracker, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get the two halves of a graham cracker. You spread Nutella on both crackers, and you put vanilla ice cream in the middle and stick it in the freezer for a few hours. That is a delicious treat because the Nutella kind of hardens.
That's excellent, Scott.
I was really worried yourself. You were going to say put a peep on it and throw it in the microwave, and I was going to have to leave the company.
We're going to have to leave the show. Scott gives a good food take. And I'm not going to give any takes because you know they're going to be bad. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Baseball Today. See you later, everybody.